Well, good morning, everybody. Let me adjust some of my levels, if you don't mind, and I use your time to do that because I'm coming a little hot down here at the studio, and so I'll bring that down. And I'm actually in Tempe for the first time in 100 years, and as a result of that, there's a lot of knobs here that I need to get command of. And I've done that so far, so good. We're going to be here for the next 2 hours talking about cars, and you're more than welcome to join us. The easy part to do it is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and that gets you in. And if you have a car question or a car problem, if maybe you heard about this and you want me to comment, or if someone said this, then you want me to comment, I'd be happy to do that. I've been in the, I started working at a gas station in Tempe at Broadway and Priest in 1968. And I worked there, and I was taught back then, the guys on the freeway, there was some discussion on whether they were good guys or the bad guys. And I worked for a good guy, but then I also had a snapshot of the bad guys. And in the old days, obviously, there was liquid smoke that they'd put on your alternator belt and tell you you need an alternator, really, but this little drop of this stuff on your belt causes lots of blue smoke or gray smoke, and they would sell you the idea that you needed to spend some money to fix it. And those are the things that they used to do. They don't do that anymore because people are a whole lot smarter, plus full-service gas stations are kind of a thing of the past. And so lifting up the hood and short-sticking your dipstick and all that kind of stuff is stuff that I saw when I was a young child and in high school, but it's not stuff that you have to worry about today. Or if you worry about having somebody check your hood, then you just get out and look over their shoulder. Piece of cake. 602-508-0960. When it comes to car repair, you have lots of choices. My life is dominated with car questions. mark@marksalem.com is my email address, mark@marksalem.com. And a lot of them hinge around just different ideas, but let me just tell you of a situation that occurred last week that was unusual in the sense that it was of the magnitude it was. So a customer of ours, had left their Jeep out in the rain and hadn't put the cover on it. And when it rained, then it wouldn't start and run. We looked at it, and we determined that the body control module, now there's a variety of modules in most of all of your cars. We have a body control module, a transmission control module, we have a module that controls ignition and fuel delivery. So we have all these different boxes, and these boxes have responsibilities. In this particular case, we were out because we had no way to communicate like the dealers. So I called a friend of mine at the local Dodge dealer, and I said, hey, I need you to take this Jeep and fix it for me. And I says, it's beyond our capabilities, and so we're going to pass it to you. And he says, no problem. So we get the Jeep back, and in reality what they did, and I thought this was genius, they simply disassembled the dash area to gain access to the dash, and they used high-pressure air, and they just blew all the water out of all the connectors, and everything was fine. Now, I made it sound pretty easy, but it was still a $400 repair. It was all labor, and I'm imagining that they spent 3 to 4 hours taking the dash apart, blowing all the water out, checking the ignition switch, make sure it starts and runs and the gauges all fire up, cleaning this, cleaning that, and then they put it all back together, and I can clearly see that that's 3 to 4 hours worth of work. So we were grateful because they fixed it, but in addition to that, they got a lot of stuff that the vehicle needed. I'm happy to be friends of theirs, but at the same time, right now, our industry is in deep water. Our industry, we've got cars out there that don't really need any service until 100,000 miles, other than oil changes and rotating your tires. That's it, 100,000 miles. In the old days, we got to see every 3,000 miles, and we got to have a tranny service here, a cooling system flush, or a battery service, or rear brakes, front brakes, exhaust work, whatever. We had a lot there, so the oil change was an opportunity to sell you something. And I firmly believe that the majority of the people sell you something that you actually need. But I see every day these kinds of tickets. And I saw one the other day where there was almost $1,400 worth of work. And if you looked at the owner's manual, none of it was needed based on the mileage of the vehicle, which was 62,000. None of it. The manual is the God Bible for your car. It's written by the people that built or designed and then built and then sold you that car. It's written by them. Now, there's some pretty standard arenas that you go into. Most of all, in the old days, like I said, at 30,000 miles, we did lots of fluids. Today, that's moved to 100,000 miles. But you'll hear people say to you, the manual's not written for Arizona. And I suggest that you say something like this. Oh, I didn't know that. Would you order me a manual from Arizona? Because they don't exist. The manual's written for everywhere that that car, truck is made and sold to the public. So there is no such thing as an Arizona manual. And in reality, there's no such thing as Alaska or Louisiana or the panhandle of Florida. It isn't. It's a generic thing that you should stick pretty close to. But if they want 100,000 miles transmission service, it's because we have synthetic fluid in it. It's because we have a great filtering system, and because historically this transmission will last 200,000 miles, but we want new fluid in it and changing the filter at 100 or at 80 or at 90 or 110, whatever it is. But get your owner's manual out. But when you get that big laundry list of stuff, it's okay for you to say, well, I'd like a little bit of your time. Of course, you're talking to the service writer. I'd like a little bit of your time. Explain to me why I need a transmission service. Here's the problem on the other end here. The service writer's job is to get the car in and get it to the right technician to get the problem solved. So if we have a guy who's an air conditioning expert, he's going to get all the AC jobs. Anything to do with climate controls, he'll get it. We've got a front-end guy that's real special in suspensions and alignment and tire wear. He gets that. So all of us have these guys that are really good in one section of the car. So you don't give an electrical problem to the guy that's doing brakes. It's not in your best interest, nor is it in the shop's best interest. So at the end of the day, we are moving these targets around. We are pretending like that you need this. I saw a bill the other day, and this wasn't from a dealership. This was from a chain store. And there wasn't a single thing on this $1,100 estimate that was approved based on the parameters of the owner's manual. That's all there is to it. It's not there. So it doesn't call for a tranny service or a differential service. It doesn't call for lower. First of all, it doesn't call for many parts unless there are symptoms. So if you start wearing the inside edge of both front tires, that could be an alignment or that could be a front suspension problem that's causing that abnormal wear. You have to go in and find it, bid it, and fix it. Now, you're not going to fix the tires if they have inside wear. Obviously, inside wear much more than the rest of the tire. You're not going to fix it. You're just going to put that tire on the back of the car, bring the backs to the front, and we start all over again. So that's how it's supposed to work. So if I could be the king of your world for a little bit, then you say to people that give you these laundry lists, you say, can I go get my owner's manual and you show me where it says in there? Because, I mean, just help me out here. It'll never happen. And if you ask them what the symptoms are, what is it that you say I need this $300 transmission fluid flush at 42,000 miles? I mean, what do you see? They won't have an answer for that either. The fact of the matter is there are symptoms and obvious symptoms that would necessitate you needing a transmission service. We pull the dipstick, we smell it, it's burnt, the fluid is brown, you have 80,000 miles on it, and we look at the back, you got a trailer hitch that's been used a lot. And we know you're a cowboy, and we know you bring your horse trailer in here and we do the wheel bearings once a year. So one and one equals two. So in that particular case, you kind of know that's what's going on. By the same token, there's lots of customers we have that we don't know. But we can look at the mileage, and we got a six-year-old car with 20,000 miles on it. This person's not driving a lot of miles. So there are lots of shops out there that will tailor fit the oil changes based on that. So we kind of move things around to make sure that we get to look at your car once or twice a year, and that's what's in your best interest. Because the oil change is more than draining the oil, putting new oil in it, taking the filter off, putting a new filter on it, greasing a couple of zerts on the front end where we pump a little grease into the ball joints or the tie rod ends or whatever. The idea is it's an inspection of the whole car. So we're going to check belts, hoses, fluids. We're going to check tires. We're going to check brakes. All of that is part of an oil change. So most of the time, when we're adjacent to the Ahwatukee Mountain Park Ranch area, and we have lots of seniors that don't drive a lot of miles, we have many of those on a one-year call. We want to see the car in April or May, because that's the beginning of the summer, and we want to make sure you're going to make it through the summer. That's it. Piece of cake. Now, yeah, we do lots of oil changes in April, but again, it's once a year because Mrs. Jones only drives 8,000 miles a year. So that's it. We're just going to see her once a year. Part of the oil change has everything to do with what you do during the oil change. Again, it's oil and filter, grease whatever zerts they are, check all the fluids, the belts, the hoses, look for any obvious problems, and notify the owner and bid the repair or bid the correction. That's what an oil change is all about. There are people out there who own shops where the oil change is really a reoccurring sales opportunity. So every time you go in, if you need something, again, it's okay to say, let me go get my owner's manual and you show me what page that's on. 99 times out of 100, they'll refuse and tell you they don't have time. First of all, they don't know what your owner's manual is, but they're just doing what we call odometer surfing. At 30,000 miles, I want to try to sell you lots of fluid changes. Transmission, differential, cooling system flush, brake fluid flush, and none of those on any car built in the last 10 to 15 years is at a 30,000 mile call. None of those. None of those. So you might be able to bring me an owner's manual from some car that I've never heard of before that calls for 30,000 on one of those, but you're not going to find very many of them. It's just your owner's manual is the Bible for your car. And so when they tell you something verbally, ask them to put it on the work order. You ladies, you just say, my husband wants to see it in writing because he doesn't trust me to get all the technical nature of the discussion we're having. That's okay. This is the same way all the time. Just give them an excuse why you want them to tell you. Instead of telling you, moving their mouth, you want them to write it down. That will also, if they forget to write down, you know, two things, a brake fluid flush and a transmission service that equals $850, there's a reason they forgot to write it down. And that's because they don't want you to take it someplace else. They pull the stick. The fluid's cherry red. You smell the stick. There's no burnt nothing. You look at everything. Everything is fine. There is nothing to suggest except this, the mileage. So that's called odometer surfing. We're just going to look at the odometer. And if you take 100 guys that work on cars, there's going to be 50 of them that have kind of the same list. And the other 50 are going to have a different list. But they all have different parameters. But most of the time, we pay our technicians based on a commission, on a labor portion. So if we charge you $150 an hour, they're going to get some portion of that. Depending on their quality and stuff like that, they're going to get between $10 an hour all the way up to sometimes $18 and $20 an hour. And even north of that, if they're an ASC master and if they can fix anything except the crack of dawn on a broken heart, then those are the big dogs that make the big money. And those are $100,000 a year jobs. It's not that we have to pay them, but if you want a master that can work on every car from an Alfa Romeo to a Mercury Zephyr, then you got to get somebody who's been there. And it ain't going to be some kid that just got out of the technical school 2 days ago. It's going to be a gray-haired guy somewhere that started at a gas station. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and if you'd like to join us or have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Kevin's in front of you. Kevin, I'm going to get to you in about 30 seconds, but this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. Tom and I have been friends since 1983. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner, I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom knows what's right or wrong. Tom's strong enough to make certain his technicians understand that he knows the difference between right and wrong. Tom's really good at diagnostics. He's a real family kind of business, and he has a relationship with parts vendors that many of us admire. And as a result of that, then there's no need to sell lots of parts and lots of labor. He's plenty busy. So if you're in the area of Deer Valley Road and the I-17, then Action Auto Repair is a good place. And if you want to call in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Kevin's been waiting. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Really appreciate you and your show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, I've got a 2006 Dodge Ram 2500 pickup with the 5.9 Cummins in it.
Okay.
And I also added the AirDog 2.4G fuel lift air separator to it. Anyway, I've been having a little startup problem, not starting the engine, but starting to get going, that's been real intermittent, but it's getting more frequent. And it's usually when I first start the car, you know, the first time coming out of the garage, whatever, when I push on the gas slowly, it stumbles. It's like it's not getting fuel, and I have to push the pedal down more or sometimes lift it up. But it's getting to be a little more, happening a little more frequently, like not just when I first start out, but when I stop at a stoplight or stop sign or something like that, or leaving a parking lot or whatever.
Okay. How many miles are on it?
A little over 100,000, really, 105, 108.
Okay. Not a bunch for a vehicle that is at six. Has anybody done the fuel filters in a while?
Yeah, I had the fuel filters on my air dog changed here. It had checked out not too long ago, really.
Okay. Is there any time after, for instance, after it warms up, does it go to normal? Does it become a normal driver and truck?
Yeah, and it was doing more normal. I had my mechanic take a look at it some months ago when it was a lot more intermittent, and he couldn't get it to happen.
Okay.
But it's getting to be more frequent now.
Okay. You have to be careful because you don't want to take it in and have somebody do a bunch of testing that could be from $150 to $350 and then tell you that there's nothing there.
Right.
It has to be some kind of, we can duplicate the issue. You teach us how to duplicate the issue. What part of town do you live in, north, south, east, west?
North, up near Anthem.
Okay. One of the best diesel guys in the whole wide world is Strictly Diesel, and mm-hmm. he drives a Dodge. And he knows the 5.9 like there's no tomorrow. Again, the issue is if you call Nate at Strictly Diesel. Nate at Strictly Diesel. He's on Deer Valley in the I-17. You say to Nate, I've got this problem, and this is what it does in the mornings. And I've been able to verify that it'll do it almost every single morning. So with your permission, is it okay if I drop it off during the day, and then you guys start it up two mornings in a row and see if you can figure out what's going on?
Okay.
That's the kind of wrap you should have.
I wondered if there's some kind of a throttle module or sensor or something like that can go bad on something like that. Or...
Well, here's the problem. Typically, the computer will identify a problem and set a code. Now, the code could be, hey, Mark, I think it's over here when really it's over here. So the computer sees something in the tailpipe. It sees something as far as the air intake sensor on the temperature of the air. Well, if it's being lied to, then it does stupid stuff. So when you go in there and you look at the code, you just can't replace that component. You have to test that component. And otherwise, mm-hmm. otherwise, you know, we've had cars come in with five codes, and if we just replace all those components, we're talking about $1,000, and
sure.
it turns out to be a vacuum leak. So a small piece of hose that was 8 inches long, that's 3/8 in diameter, inside diameter, that's what it needed, and we just charged them $1,000. Not we, but our industry. So mm-hmm. I think I would just describe it in writing. This is what you do, and this is what it does, and make an appointment to drop it off the night before and have them restart it in the morning. They're right down the street from you. And I of all the guys in town, Nate is in the top 10 of diesel guys, if he's not in the top 5, okay?
Okay.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you very much. Good question. It's really important what you don't do is tell the shop how to fix the car. Because if you went to Mr. Google and you start talking to somebody, why would you walk into my shop and tell me to replace the mass airflow sensor because you have a mass airflow sensor code? Because Mr. Google, who you've never met before and could very well be a convict in the California Penal Society, he's telling you this is what's wrong with your car. That's just craziness. I can't do that. So how the heck is he going to do it? And when you come in and you start talking about Google, I'm telling you what, most of us shop owners, our eyes glaze over, and we hope that, and some of us, I admit to this, some of us will hit you between the eye with a $500 estimate, a diagnostic charge, and here's why. We don't want you. We just don't want you. We don't want to, and you're going to say, well, this guy said this, and this guy said that, and he says you're wrong, and he says you're right. We're not going to do that. The proof in the pudding is go in and figure out what's going on and fix it. We don't need Google. We don't Google anything. We don't Google anything. Now, there is a deal not too long ago, and I explained that at the beginning of the show, where we had a Jeep that the top was left off and there was a lot of water in the dash area. The dealership blew the water out and saved the customer a heck of a lot of money, because that body control module installed is about $1,200. Well, they unwatered the dashboard with compressed air and stuff. I think it was $299. I thought it was really fair. But we had passed on it because we'd not seen this before. So we really didn't know what the repair was. But we also knew that the code said that the body control module was raising the white flag. In reality, the body control module was raising the white flag because of all the moisture in the connections. The dealership took the dashboard apart, took everything apart, blew everything dry, put it back together, and it fixed it. And I think their bill was $400, and I thought that was very fair. And it happened to be a customer of mine. So those kinds of things happen, but you have to be careful of Mr. Google, because you don't know who he is. And when I go onto Google, and sometimes I'll even, you know, Google something for the fun of it, I can tell you that 95% of the time, everybody's wrong. And on the other five, it might be Mr. Google Utah says, it could be this, this, or this, and one of his three guesses is the answer. So you just can't do that. It's okay to do, but let me explain real quick. The computer is on a circuit of 5 volts. It doesn't really mean there's some of them 8, there's some of them 12, but for just the sake of discussion, 5 volts. The computer says 5 volts to the throttle position sensor, and the throttle position sensor will send back some portion of that 5 volts. If it sends back 1 volt, the computer knows the car is idling. If the sensor sends back 5 volts to the main computer, then the computer knows your foot's on the floor and everything in between. Okay? So 1 volt is idle, 5 is wide open throttle. That's how the entire circuit works. The entire computer, the oxygen sensor, is between 0 and 1 volt. 0.5 is what we want to see. We don't really want to see 1, and we don't want to see 9, but we want to see 0.5. But if all we see is 1, then that means something to us. Typically, that means that the computer is seeing a lean condition, so it keeps shutting off the fuel, or turning on the fuel, and now we have rotten egg smell. 1 and 1 equals 2. So it's a matter of knowing what you're looking at, and knowing how the computer system works, and all the sensors that give the computer information so the computer can control spark and fuel. And that's what it's all about. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's 5 of them. 602-508-0960. It's after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday I'm here at 960 KKNT talking about cars and car problems and check engine lights and do I need this, do I need that, and what's the symptoms of this and something of that. I am an ASE Master Technician. I do own my own shop. This radio show is not about my shop. It's about our industry. And hopefully I can help you understand when somebody opens their mouth, you should be able to tell if they're shoveling snow or if they have your interests in front of their own. And typically, in our industry, you're going to find both people. The problem really has everything to do with who needs sales, and then of course that's when the pressure's put on the staff to sell more, and that's when they start deviating from industry standards. Otherwise, if your transmission needs a service at 100,000 miles, they tell you that you're due at 30 and you should do it every 30. Well, that benefits them, but it doesn't benefit you, and it's not going to make your transmission love you if you change the fluid every 30 instead of at 80 or 100. It's not going to happen. A good shop in town for transmissions, and we're talking about that, is Automatic Transmission Exchange. He's on 40th Street in Washington, and Phil's been around since 1968. Him and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts. So if you call them and make an appointment, they'll go take a ride with you, and if you can make it happen, that's an important consideration. You need to practice on how to make it happen, and then they'll take a ride with you. And oftentimes they're going to plug a scanner in, and they're going to talk to the computer, and they're going to say, hey, what are you doing about this? And let me see your voltage here, and let me see your value here. But you don't know that, and neither does Mr. Google, because he's actually a pharmacist Monday through Friday, but he's a car expert when you Google a car repair expert. Nevertheless, Automatic Transmission Exchange, you don't have to worry about guys that don't know what they're talking about. Let's go to Dick. Dick, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. You've helped me before. I have a 2003 Lincoln Town Car. Unfortunately, day before yesterday, I was hit at 7th Street and Camelback from the passenger tail light back, and it tore the bumper and the entire trunk out and buckled one side. They're saying that it's total. I just restored the car. I put new tires on for about $1,200. I had the transmission gone through, the engine gone through. What, it had 112, 113,000 miles on it. It ran perfect. It drove like a dream. What would you put a value on something like that so I don't get lowballed here?
Well, I don't think that's the question. Who's your insurance company?
USAA.
Okay. And how far away is their number from where you want to be?
They're offering about 3,000. I've got another almost 15 in it.
16,000 in it.
Yeah, I've got 15. I've got 50 with the tires and all the mechanic work.
Wait a minute. They're not buying the whole car for that, okay? We have to focus here. You've got some corner damage in the back end of the car. And they're saying to you that the most they want to pay is $3,000. Have you had anybody look at it to see what kind of an estimate that is?
Yeah, the adjuster says it's total. Got to get an estimate. They're not going to do that until it's next week. So.
Okay. Well, let me tell you that there's four insurance companies I love, and USAA is one of them. I think what you have to do is not put on an adversarial face, because they may very well say that we're going to total the car and we're going to give you $3,000, and you might find that you're going to spend $3,000 fixing the car. So,
right.
I mean, there's different ways to skin it, but you're not going to win the battle, because it's unreasonable for anybody to assume that this 03 Lincoln Town Car is worth $15,000-$16,000. It just isn't, and they're not, and you haven't paid premiums based on a $16,000, because that's called a stated value. Your premiums would be three times what they are now if you were to say, I want to insure it for $16,000.
Right.
So I think really and truly you need to negotiate with them and say, no, I've got some receipts. I've got quite a bit in this car. I want to keep this car. I don't think it's a total. Perhaps maybe go to a couple of body shops and have them write a sheet on it to fix it, and then you go to them and say, here's the fix. I want you to fix it, and I will accept responsibility.
Okay. So, thank you.
I want to tell you, it's Geico, Liberty Mutual, Farm Bureau, and USAA. Those four people want to hear the truth from experts like me. Many, many times, it's been my experience that I want you to go look, other insurance companies, I want you to go look at this car, and this is what I want your report to write. What write?
Right.
And I don't participate in that kind of shenanigans. So I am quite sure, if you've been a USAA customer for a long time, and obviously you or your wife came from a military background, I'm quite sure with some dialogue and getting your agent involved, then some dialogue, you'll get the car fixed, and you might end up with a couple $100 in your pocket. So I think that's what you should shoot for.
Who would you recommend for a good body shop?
You know, I think what I'd do is I'd call my agent and ask him who he has a relationship with, because there's a body shop out there that's going to be tied with some agents, and the body shop's not going to bite the hand that fed them. So the body shop's not going to eat people from USAA or State Farm or Farmers, depending on who's referring. So go to your agent and ask him who fixed your wife's car or your car last, and use that body shop.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Okay,
have a good day, sir.
And you too. Thank you. The insurance business is tough, I got to tell you. But there's times where they have rules, and it seems like they don't bend them. But I'm telling you for a fact that they do, under the right circumstances. So his taillight and his damage to the back of his car probably won't be that much money, and it's certainly not going to be. The $16,000 confuses the issue. The $16,000 I have in the car, that confuses the issue. Let's just focus on the repair. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. We have five lines, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. It's 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we have five lines open if you have a car question or a car problem, or if there's an argument in your family, or perhaps maybe you took your car in and they told you you needed to do this work at this much money, and you want to discuss it with me, I can perhaps arm you with some questions to ask them about what symptoms do I have that you're going to fix with this $1,100 repair? How come I don't have a check engine light with this $1,100 repair, et cetera, et cetera? So if you'd like to talk now, 602-508-0960. We have five lines available. You're welcome to call 602-508-0960, and we're going to be here for the 11 to 12 o'clock hour as well, so you have plenty of time to call in. Automotive Dynamics has been in Sun City since 1982. I've known Chuck since the 1960s. And they do something that's unusual. They don't pay their mechanics a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. So Chuck can ensure that the technicians and the staff doesn't sell unnecessary parts or repair. I don't do that, but I admire him for doing that, because that says to his customers unequivocally, there's no motivation to sell the world to you because they're not on commission. I'm paying them an hourly salary, and that's good enough for them. So if you're in Sun City and you say, hey, who's a good shop? Then I say Automotive Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. So Grand and 99th Avenue. Let's see. We don't have anybody on the line, so the lines are wide open. I'll tell you in about... Oh, we do have somebody on the line. Gil?
Say hello to Raphael.
Raphael, how are you?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 96 Mitsubishi 3000 GT. It's got about 235,000 miles on it. In the morning, with this colder weather, it kind of, when you start it up, it idles really high, around 2,500 RPMs. I was wondering, is there any way of dropping that down, or do you think that's bad for it, or what do you think?
No, I don't think that's bad for it at all. Here, let me tell you what happens. In the time it takes you to put your key in and turn it to the start position, the computer has already snapshotted the engine. It knows it's cold. It knows the engine's not hot. It's not even warm. It's cold. It knows what the humidity is. It knows what the temperature is. It even knows what time of day it is and all that jazz. The computer now puts all of that into this little file over here, and the computer says, oh, it's early in the morning. I want the RPMs at 2,500 RPM. And I don't want you to come off the 2,500 RPM until I see some heat from the temperature sender. So the temperature sender, the ambient temperature, we were in Payson the other night. It was 16 degrees when I woke up to go feed the horses. It's damn cold. So in that particular case, the computer looks at the chart and says 16 degrees, humidity is here, and here's the frost level. Okay, I want 2,500 RPM, and I want you to hold that until we get up to the 160 to 180 range. And then I'm going to bring you down to about 1,100. And then after that, after we get to full operating temperature, which is 195 to 220, then I'm going to bring them down to 600 or 700 RPM. I like the idea that you're going to 1,500 RPM, and I'll tell you why. At 1,500 RPM, we're building heat. We don't want a bunch of moisture in the engine oil. So we need to get the oil temperature and the cooling system up to 220, 190 to 220. Once we do that, then any water in the oil is evaporated, because water boils at 212. So we get that water out of there, and we're home free. So I have, if you would have turned the question around and said, hey, in the morning, my Mitsubishi 2000 GT with 235,000 miles on it, which I find impressive as well, what would you expect the idle to be on a really cold morning in Phoenix? And my answer would have been somewhere in the 2000 range, plus or minus. That's what my answer would have been. So I see nothing wrong with that. I think you should just let it go. And here's what you don't want to do. You don't want to start it up. It brings it up to 2200, and you need to sit there for a minute or two. Let the motor run. And with your fuel-injected car, you can't kick this choke off, because there is no choke. On some of the carbureted cars, you can kick the choke off. But in that case, you just put it in reverse. You'll see the RPM drop. It'll see, oh, he put it in gear. He doesn't need 2,500. He only needs 900. Boom, the idle goes to 900. So the computer's working pretty quick. I see nothing wrong or nothing that needs to be fixed.
All right, great. Thank you. Do you have time for one quick question?
I do. Go right ahead.
I just acquired a 95 Ford F-150 with 135,000 miles on it. I was considering switching to synthetic, or do you think maybe a synthetic blend might be better?
Well, I think what you need to do is just go with a conventional oil for a 3,000 to 5,000 mile oil change, and let's see how much it uses. If it's not using any oil in a 3,000 to 5,000 mile oil change, then you can go to either one. Here's the difference. First of all, there's a price difference. You know that. The difference is oil change intervals. How many miles a year are you going to drive this 95 F-150? How many miles a year you think you'll put on it?
Oh, I'm guessing probably about 5,000 to 7,000.
Okay. If I were you, I can answer your question in a heartbeat. Forget the synthetic. Forget the semi-synthetic. Put conventional oil in there. Conventional oil will go 3,000 to 5,000 miles a year. No problem. Why would you put in a $110 oil and not take advantage of it? And I don't want you to go 2 years or 3 years between oil changes, because oil changes is checking the fluids, the belts, the hoses, the tires, the brakes, all that stuff. So if I were you, I'd put a regular oil in that thing and I'd change it every 5,000 miles. That's what I'd do.
All right, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, Raphael. Thank you. 602-508-0960. We've got another 10 minutes of this show, plus we're going to be back for the second hour from 11 to 12 right here on 960 KKNT. So you're welcome to join us. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, you can use a different phone number, 888-960-9696. And obviously that has everything to do with this is the Patriot KKNT 960 on your AM dial. So again, outside the metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. The oil issue, it comes up all the time in my world, and I'm okay with that. I am an oil expert. I've been trained by both Valvoline and Chevron. And I pour Chevron at our facility, but this show isn't about my shop. But the oils, the three oils that we have, which is conventional oil, which is what we had in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, all the first oil, that's good from 3,000 to 5,000 miles. Period. End of story. So if I've got a customer, just like we just talked to Raphael, if he's going to drive 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 miles a year, then just a conventional oil is fine. I don't want him to go 3 years on a synthetic, because again, the oil change is an inspection. We're supposed to look at the tires, the belts, the hoses. We're looking for leaks. We're looking for broken bolts. We're looking for crushed motor mounts. We're looking at power steering lines. We're looking at that. It's a physical examination. So we don't want to go 25,000 miles like when they first came out with Mobil 1, which was a huge joke back in the 80s. When they came out with Mobil 1, they told everybody to go 25,000 miles. Do you know how many people lunched motors with Mobil 1 in the early days? You can't go 25,000 miles, and you can't pretend like that you just shut the hood and go 25,000 miles. Somebody has to pull the dipstick on that thing every once in a while. Well, people didn't do that. They put it in, 25,000. They put it on the door sticker, 8,000, 9,000. The thing's down to 2 of the 5 quarts. And then pretty soon, the oil light comes on, and now we got a damaged motor. And that's because somebody thinks they're going to drive 25,000 miles without ever opening up the hood, and that is a bad idea. So it's really, really important to manage that risk. So conventional oil, up to 5,000. Then 5 to 7,500 for a semi-synthetic. Now, here's the key. Semi-synthetic, is that a 50-50 mix? Or is that a... And 50-50 is 50% conventional oil, the old oil, and 50% synthetic. Is that what it is? But the answer is no. Everybody's, it's kind of proprietary. So a semi-synthetic can be 90-10. It can be 90 conventional and 10% synthetic. It could be. But a full synthetic is the big dog. Full synthetic has a much higher temperature protection. It has a much lower temperature flow. For instance, synthetic oil will pour out of the can at 60 below zero. It's not like that's a temperature we have to deal with in Phoenix, but it will pour out of the can at 60 below. But if you go buy a can of 1030 in conventional, it ain't pouring out of the can at 60 below. It's going to be just jello, and it's not going to pour out of the can. And when you start your car, it's not going to provide lubrication, because we want to suck liquid through the oil pump. We're not going to suck jello through the oil pump. So then full synthetic, between 10, 12,000 on the low side and 25,000 miles on the high side. I got to tell you, I use full synthetic in my diesel truck, and I change it every 10,000 miles. Every 10,000 miles. I drive about 20 to 30,000 miles a year as I go up and down the mountain, from taking the horses north, taking the horses south, and hauling hay and all that other kind of stuff. So I use a synthetic. My wife has a synthetic. Every car in my family has synthetic in it, but we all use it differently. My wife drives short trips. So we bring her in on a year, no matter what her mileage is, and change the oil. Here's why. She never gets the oil to a position where the oil gets over 212, and then we boil the water out of it. So she never really gets into a strong heat cycle. We want the car to have a strong heat cycle. We want it to get up to about 190 to 220. That's the oil temperature. That's the coolant temperature. We want it to get up there because we want to turn the water to a vapor, and then the PCV valve is going to suck the water vapor out of the engine and send it out the tailpipe. So when we get a, when we have an engine oil, we want to go through a heat cycle, and we want many of them, because the more heat cycles we go through, then the less water in the oil. Every time you shut your car off, no matter whether it's in the summer or in the winter in the Phoenix area, you're going to have some condensation. It's just like, so you turn it off, there's going to be droplets of oil that are going to form that are going to fall into your oil. Now, it's not going to turn the oil white, because that's what a gallon of oil or a gallon of water would turn your oil white. It's not going to turn it white, but it's still going to be there. But those of us like me that's hauling horses and hauling trailers and hauling hay, our temperatures get up to 220. And so if I were going to check my oil, I would bet the farm that there would be no water in my oil. But water is an issue for those of you that live in Sun City and drive 3,000 miles a year, and the farthest you go is 10 miles to church. Water is an issue, but that's why we want you to come in. And typically, I want to change those kinds of customers. I want to change their oil right before summertime. So somewhere in April or May, I want to change their oil, because I want them to go through fresh oil through the summertime, and then I'll see them a year later. And that's how kind of we do it. And there's many shops like that. Speaking of shops, there's some really good shops in town. Blackwell Auto is at 40th and Greenway. Tom knows the difference between right and wrong. He's a general repair. Plus, he has a vintage car section in his store. And so if you have an older model car and you want somebody to upgrade it, or maybe put fuel injection on it, or just get it running, then Blackwell's a good guy at 40th Street and Greenway. Kurtz Auto Repairs up at I-17 and Bell. Kurtz has been around a long time. We've been friends for a very long time. And the thing that really embraced me to Kurtz was him and his wife still do, to some extent, new customers. His wife will visit their house and offer them homemade baked goods in thanking them for trusting Kurtz to work on their cars. And I just think that's the old-fashioned way that we used to do in the 60s and 70s, is thank people for patronizing us, and Kurtz did a good job. But not to mention, he's been around since 1987. He works on gas and diesel. He has ASE-certified technicians and ASE-master-certified technicians. And the difference between the two is this. There are between 8 and 20 tests you can take, and if you pass two of them, then you are ASE-certified to work on those two issues of a car. It might be transmission and air conditioning. You're ASE certified. But when you're a master, you've passed all the tests, and you are certified to work on that car from front bumper to rear bumper. I am a master, and Kurtz has got two or three masters working for him. Eric is a master, and Kurt's a master. So I-17 and Bell Road, 602-508-0960. If you want to ask a car question, or if you have a dilemma where someone said that you need this kind of work, I'm really good at those kinds of give and take. I'm going to ask you about symptoms. I'm going to ask you about the dollars. I'm going to ask you about exactly what they're doing. I'm going to ask you what kind of car you have, and I'm going to do my best to help you figure out whether they have your interest in front of theirs, or whether theirs is in front of yours. And what that really means is, there are times of the year that auto repair is slow. And we are in that time, because if you made it through the summer in Phoenix, you're going to coast through the fall and the winter. So during this period of time, there's a whole lot of, you're due for this, and this is what it's going to cost you. All I'm suggesting to you is pull out your owner's manual, hand it to them, and say, show me where it says that I need to service my transmission at 30,000 miles. If they know that it isn't in there, they're going to say, well, this manual isn't written for Arizona. And then you say, okay, then order me an Arizona manual, and thank you very much. And they don't make an Arizona manual. That manual, no matter where that thing was purchased and where it's going to be driven, that manual applies. So when you hear that, you'll laugh, and that's what I do. 602-508-0960. And when he says 608 or 602-508-0960, he means the lines are wide open. There's five of them. So if you have a discussion with your wife or your husband or your father-in-law or your own dad or your neighbor and you want somebody to chime in on your discussion or your argument or whatever, then I'm a good guy for that. 602-508-0960. If you recently got a repair notice or and you have a work order in front of you and they're asking you to, you know, consider doing all this stuff, then just have the work order in front of you and let's have a conversation. I'm going to say your make and model. How many miles has it got on it? Now tell me what they said you needed. See, the next question out of my mouth is I'm going to think to myself, what are the symptoms associated with an injector flush? And if you don't have the symptoms, then you don't need the injector flush. And let me tell you something. This is no secret. You can't imagine how lucrative injector flushes can be. You can't imagine how lucrative some of the, anything with the word flush is very lucrative. There's no risk. There's huge reward. There's nothing that we're going to do that's going to be bad to your car. We can flush your transmission. We can flush your differential. We can flush your brake fluid. We can flush your power steering fluid. We can flush anything and everything in your car. The question is why? Why are we flushing? So when was the last time that we had to spend major dollars on somebody's car because the brake fluid wasn't flushed? The answer is never. Here's the problem. We do have the ability to check the moisture content of your brake fluid, and there is a line in the sand. So if someone comes to you and says, you're only allowed to have 5% water, moisture, and if you'll walk over here, I'm going to use this little litmus paper, and I'm going to check the moisture content on your brake fluid, and if you look right here, it's more than twice that amount. And water and brake fluid are not good together. So I'm going to give you an estimate to flush your brake system, and here's why. So I just did it in front of you. That's a home run, folks. That's a home run. I had one lady say, where's your car at? And he said, it's that black truck right over there. Let's go check your brake fluid. Okay. So they go over there. He lifts his own hood. He takes the litmus paper. He sticks it in. He pulls it out. And it's like 2%. And he goes, there. And she says, okay, fine. I thought that was genius. Let's go check your car. Let's go check your wife's car. But those are the kinds of things that are important. And then... if you're going to deal with somebody that you're not quite sure about their scruples, then tell them to write it down and send you a copy of the repair order. So, and you ladies, you can do it this way. My husband is the guy that makes these decisions, but he's going to want it in writing. So just write it down. Here's my email address, or here's, you know, go to Facebook and send us to this on a private message, whatever you want to do. And that's really a good thing because we won't write it down. My industry won't write it down if it's not true. And if somebody else looks at it and then all of a sudden that person goes to the Attorney General's office, to the Consumer Fraud Division, and they already have a folder on this particular shop and they're selling the heck out of transmission services or brake fluid services on newer model cars, then that might be worth a peek somewhere down the line. Those are the kinds of issues that many of us see. And many of us are asked to participate in. There's lots of shops in town that the law enforcement knows. They'll give them the right. They're not going to give them the right answer. They're going to give them the truth. But you have to have the question first. So if they ask me, I say, I need to know what the question is. On this particular car, tell us the condition of the brake fluid. Piece of cake. No problem. And we got a caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Lee.
Lee, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Got a 2003 Jeep Wrangler 6-cylinder. I believe it's fuel injected. And when you push on the gas, it accelerates or lurches other than a smooth transition.
Okay.
And it's kind of annoying how it jumps basically.
Okay. Okay.
And then it's fine the rest of the time.
So it does it first thing in the morning?
No, it'll do it anytime.
Okay. Okay. And there's no check engine light?
No.
Okay. All right. How many miles are on the Jeep?
About 130, I think.
Okay. I think if I were working on that, and I'm sure it's fuel injected, if I were working on that, we would have a more in-depth conversation. Like, when you hit the gas, is there kind of a hesitation and then it takes off? Or when you hit the gas, is it more of a stumble, and then it smooths right out? Those are the kinds of symptoms you want to tell your shop. So just make the noise and tell them. And it only does it first thing in the morning when it's cold. First thing in the morning. Now, after I get 4 miles away, it doesn't happen for the rest of the day until the next morning. And it doesn't happen in the summertime. It only happens in the wintertime. But I think I'm going to guess that if we cleaned the throttle plates in your air intake system, there's a butterfly that's hooked to your throttle pedal, and that's what makes the car go faster. And this flapper is a horizontal flapper, but there's a small amount of space between the flapper and the mouth, okay?
Right.
We want air to go all the way around that flapper, and that air is what keeps the engine running at idle. Now, what happens is, as the flapper goes from horizontal to vertical, we build up this ring of dirt around the flapper, and we need that ring to be gone because we need that air at idle. So what we do is we take all the stuff off the top of the engine, all the plastic stuff and the air cleaner hose and all that other crap, and we stick the throttle wide open. We take a long screwdriver, we put it rag on the end of the screwdriver, and we tape it to the long screwdriver. We spray carburetor cleaner all over the rag, and this is the key is off, and the key is in your pocket. This isn't running. I don't want you sucking that rag into a running motor. And we just go, and we just go up and down all the way around. You can actually see the dirt, and all you're doing is cleaning it. Then at the very end, you take your can of carb spray, and then you keep the throttle wide open so that that carburetor spray will dissipate and not go to a liquid. We don't want to inhale liquid to the motor. So that's cleaning the throttle blades would be someplace I would say to you, no guarantee that's going to work, but I think that's where we need to start. And it's going to cost you $80 or something like that. Okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. And you know what? You can Google cleaning my throttle blades. Uh-huh. And you can just, you know, Google Wrangler cleaning the throttle blades, and there's probably going to be somebody in there that shows you kind of what I'm talking about. But what you don't do is fill the motor full of liquid carb spray. You got to give it time to evaporate, because if you get it in there and we hydraulic the cylinder and bend a rod, then you just bought a motor. So you can't do that, okay?
Okay. Sounds good. Try that.
You bet. Larry Harker's Autos at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He'd been around since 1967. Let me tell you what happened at Larry's. We had a caller on the radio call and said that they had this particular problem, and there was water leaking on the feet of the passenger on this very expensive import car. And so they said that they had taken it to a place, and the place had an estimate of, I don't know, $8,000. It was a lot of money. And it was all because the passenger's feet were, there was droplets of water, and especially if the car swerved left and right, there was water hitting the passenger's feet, and the carpet's wet. So I said, I think I need a better description, and where do you live? And they said close to Larry Harker's 38th Avenue, and he's going, I said, take it over there and have Bob look at it. So Bob looks at it, and he determines that what's going on is underneath your glove box, there's a tray of where the moisture, the water from your air conditioning system goes into the tray. Then there's a hose that takes that water outside the car. And you all know that in certain times of the year, when you park your car, you come back, there's a wet spot right underneath the passenger side floorboard. That's just the water in your air conditioning system. That's just the water. And so Bob says, the drain's plugged up. And I said, well, they're bidding a heater core, which is inside this box. They're bidding an evaporator, which is inside this box. One of them's in the cooling system. One of them's in the air conditioning system, which means both of those systems goes down. We replace those two huge components. Then we fill it back up, flush it back up. And the estimate was, I don't know, $5,000 or $6,000. And he said, I think I can fix this for less than $300. And I go, what are you going to do? And he goes, I'm just going to go inside there and clean that drain out. He says, I don't know what I'm going to have to move, but he says, I'm going to start by taking the glove box out. So he tells me later, I take the glove box out. I'm halfway there. I take this one piece of shroud off, and bingo, I can see the drain. I can see that there's a bunch of fuzz in the drain, and I can see that it's draining, but it's really slow. So I get my shop vac, suck that out. He says, and I figured, I'm just going to wash the tray out. So I just take a glass of water and I kind of pour it in the tray and it swirls around and it goes down the drain. And then I take air hose and I push it into the drain, blow it out on the ground. It's all done. Put everything back together. And I don't know, the bill was a couple hundred dollars. And that's what happened. So they're really good at what they do. They're not going to lie to you and they're not going to take advantage of you. So a second opinion is always good if the bill's north of $1,000. Who's calling?
Say hello to Susan.
Susan, how are you?
Oh, simply wonderful.
Good, good.
I've got two cars. Can I ask you a question about my 88 Vette and my 93 Dodge Spirit, my mother's old car?
Let's do the Corvette first. It's an 88.
Yes, I've had it for 26 years, and I wanted somebody to go through it, look at the hoses, look at everything. I noticed cracked brake lines and other things, and then I had somebody, the head of the Arizona Corvette Club, put it up on his rack at his home and look at it, and he gave me a list of things that he was spotting because I had a lot of leaking. I keep cardboard under my cars in the garage so I know which areas of my under the car are leaking and what color the fluids are and stuff. And so this guy that works on Corvettes, restores his old Vettes, and has a lift and about a 15-foot ceiling in his garage area built just for car restorations and stuff. He said I had under the car... He said it looks like differential leaking a little bit. He said the trans pan gasket.
Okay, Susan, we need to kind of shortcut that because I'm going to ask you lots of questions. And so it's better if we just – and so your issue is this gentleman looked at your car, had it up in the air, and he's written what kind of an estimate to fix the leaks
that he sees. He isn't going to fix it. He just did that as a favor. I was at a Corvette show with – and he just did that as a favor, and he told me what I needed to have checked out. And so I took it to a place up in Scottsdale, and I said, here's a list of what I was told. And they didn't check anything and definitely wanted my cracked brake lines fixed. And they ended up doing replacing the transmission dipstick tube O-ring and... filled my car with synthetic oil without my permission. I didn't want synthetic oil in there because I have run for 26 years regular oil, and my son is a military jet mechanic, helicopter mechanic in the Navy, and he said I wouldn't run synthetic.
Okay, we're going to take a break because I'm up against a break, but Susan, let me tell you, I agree. I don't agree with your position on synthetic oil. Okay, it's not a brand new oil, but it is the very best, and it works on every car out there, and it makes every car better. So I'll just start there, but I'm going to come back to you because I got to take a break. But I need to get to the crux of the issue. Are we dealing with leaks on the Corvette? Is that what we're dealing with?
It's still leaking, but I can't find a Vette mechanic, and that's
what I'm
looking for.
You don't need a Vette mechanic. Yeah, I mean, you can continue to look for a Vette mechanic, and there's plenty of shops that say they work on Corvettes. You'd much rather have a guy who's in his 50s and 60s that's an ASE master that's been to work, have owned his own shop for 30 years, and works on Corvettes, but he also works on everybody else's cars as well. What part of town do you live in?
I live in Chandler, Dobson, and Chandler Boulevard area.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll be back talking to you right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. But we're going to go back to Susan. Susan has an 88 Corvette. Susan, I'm saying this with a kind heart, and I'm saying this because I think you need to heed my advice. Nobody wants to deal with a customer who constantly points to so-and-so, so-and-so, this shop, and he worked on Corvettes, and he knows the guy who built Corvettes, and so nobody wants that. Nobody that I know wants that, and I don't want that either. I want somebody to bring their car in and say, I've been told I have brake lines that are cracked. Susan, do you know which brake line is cracked?
Both of them.
Okay, well, you have four.
Well, I mean all of them.
Okay. So then a guy like me, I'm 66 years old, and I've been working on cars since 1968. This is no problem. I would say, Susan, why don't you just let me do your next oil change, and I'll do the inspection for you for free? That's what we would say. That's what most shops would say. So just let me do your next oil change, or let me do your next tire repair, or whatever. But and I'll inspect them, because I've got the car up in the air already. So
that's what I asked them to do, and they don't do it.
Okay.
It was my son who noticed the cracked brake lines when he saw my car in the garage. He lives in Montana, so he can't help. But
okay, Susan, if you told him what you told me, he told you they don't do that because he doesn't want to be involved in that. There's too many cooks in the kitchen. You're listening to someone from Montana. Your son is wrong about synthetic oil. I'm an oil expert. I testify in court about oil. I've made oil from Mother Nature to what goes into your car. I understand the properties of oil. Synthetic is no different. It's conventional oil, then we have a semi-synthetic, and a synthetic can go on any car in the whole wide world. I use diesel. I have diesels. I have big trucks. Everybody in my family, there's 30-some-odd cars in my family, everybody uses synthetic oil. And I have a Corvette, a 2006 Corvette that's worth probably $150,000. I put synthetic in it. It gets an oil change once a year. That's it. Right at the beginning of the summer, I change the oil. So there's lots going on here, but what you don't want to do is I think people have already put their hand up and said, you know, we don't want any part of this, because no one wants to be involved in a discussion, and nobody wants to dance to music from somebody who lives in Ohio or Texas or California. Nobody. So the question is I would just respectfully suggest that you simply take these issues one at a time and turn it into a question. Would you take a look at my car and tell me, and look at the brake lines and tell me if I need brake lines, and if so, the rubber brake lines I'm talking about, and if so, would you bid the repair for the brake lines? And that's the answer. Just, that's what you want. Look at my brake lines. Because cracked brake lines, people use that word cracked on belts and hoses and tires and all kinds of bushings, ball joints, sway bar bushings. They use the word cracked. I would say, and I've been involved in with law enforcement for many years, if half of the cracked issues turn out to be nothing. It's normal for sway bar bushings to have some superficial cracks on the outside, but as long as the bushing is intact and as long as the bushing is in one piece, it doesn't need to be replaced because it's weathered. So those are the kinds of things that you have. What part of town do you live in? You said Chandler?
I live in Chandler, Dobson and Chandler Boulevard. I have an urgent problem with my other car with strong gas smell in the cab, and I have to get out of the car. It's so bad. So what I'm looking for is a mechanic to take care of both cars because, anyway, I need a mechanic that's honest and going to, I'm 77 years old, so when they see me drive in a Corvette, I don't know what goes on, but I just ask them to look under the hood, look at the hose, check everything out for me on the vet, and let me know what I need. And none of them will do it. So I just go to mechanic to mechanic. But right now I have an urgent problem with the
Okay, we'll write this down, okay? Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa. Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa. And I would call them and say they have their own towing service, because you better not drive that car. If you're smelling gas, that thing catches fire. You're toast. So it's, you need to tow it. And they have their own towing company, and you're going to talk to Brian or Thelma, and you're just going to say, I want to tow my car in, and I want you to call me with an estimate to fix the gas smell. That's it. Don't you dare say, well, the guy on Google said this, and my son said this. Don't do that. Don't do that.
No, I don't go in the way I've been telling you the stories and stuff. I don't go into a shop and start all that, and my son says, and this and that, and I think it's that. I just ask them, here's a symptom I'm dealing with. Would you please check it out? And then they say, okay, bring your car in, and then they work on it, and they fix this, that. And then I come home and put my new clean cardboard under the car, and we got the same leaking going on. and I can't keep going back and being charged over and over, and they're not fixing problems. So I'm looking for an honest mechanic, and I do like you're suggesting.
Okay.
And just go in and say, will you just check things out for me, let me know what's going on.
And the oil leaking. They should have said to you, if the shop did a job, an oil leak job, they should have said to you, it's unfair to judge the success of our job in the next 90 days. There's so much oil underneath your car. We washed it and cleaned it the very best we could. We replaced the oil pressure switch that was leaking profusely. We verified there's nothing dripping now, but there's a hell of a lot of oil at the bottom of your engine and at the frame. So don't judge my oil success, my oil leak success repair in the next 30 days. Now, I did my best to clean it all up, but we're still going to have some residual oil, but you're going to go from 4 drips to 3 drips and then 2 drips, and hopefully none. And I want you to know the oil leak I fixed is directly below the windshield on your car, and it's in the middle of the car, below the windshield, middle of the car. So when you stand to the side and you say, oh, well, this oil leaks at the butt of the driver's seat, that's not the oil leak I fixed. I fixed at the bottom of the windshield, right there in the middle of the car. So if you have a power steering leak, it's going to be up by the front wheels. That's going to be where the power steering is. So those are the kinds of things that the shop needs to work with you on, and you just need to ask the right question. Where's the oil leak you're going to fix? Point to me, and let's triangulate the oil. Rear main seal, oil pan, it's all at the bottom of the windshield on your Corvette. So I got to run, but good luck to you. Good luck to you. Marcia, you're up next. How can I help you?
I don't know. After this last, maybe you should just hang up. But I'm not going to give you any directions. I'm looking for the fix.
Okay.
I've had a problem with my car starting when you turn it on, and I have a 2004 Nissan Quest.
Okay.
Low mileage. I'm the original owner, and I'm 78.
Okay.
So when I turn it on, I get a click.
Okay.
Turn off, you know, go off and on, and then it'll start.
Okay.
Or sometimes it won't start, and I take the key out of the ignition, and I turn it upside down, put it back in, and it'll start.
Okay, that doesn't have anything to do
with
it.
I took the car, and they replaced, I had a loose cable on the battery. And so they replaced the cable, and the car started. And it figured it was done. And then I get home, and, you know, 2 days later, I'm back to the click.
Okay. Stop, because I'm up against a break. But you stay on the line, and I'm going to come back and talk to you. But MarkSalem.com. Go to the FAQs. MarkSalem.com. Go to the FAQs, and there's one in there that says, my car won't start. It clicks. It drags. It does what? It talks about this. Your clicking is the key. That's the key, the clicking noise, as opposed to the thump noise or the engine running noise. That's an important consideration. So when we come back, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, and I'll help you the best I can. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. I'm going to go to Marcia real quick. Marcia, I want to ask you a question. When you park your car, is it inside the garage or is it outside in front of the garage
it's
door?
Inside.
Okay, good. Inside. This is what I want you to do. Listen to me carefully. I want you to turn on your headlights after you get in the car and shut the door. Turn the headlights on. I want you then to try to start the car, and I want you to pay attention to what the headlights do. Do the headlights go completely out, and when you let go of the key, they come back on slowly? Do the headlights dim slightly, but not a lot, or do the headlights stay white and bright? And this is test. You're going to get in the car, you're going to turn on the headlights, you're going to stick your key in, and you're going to hit the key. There'll be a click. I want to know what the headlights are doing. If you walk in the door and you can describe that scenario, then anybody can fix it. I know that you live up in North Scottsdale, and Blackwell Automotive is at 40th and Greenway. I would think that you would want to call Aaron at Blackwell Automotive and tell him you have a no start click. It just clicks intermittently. And the intermittently is important because sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But if you can tell them what the headlights do when this happens, huh, you'll save yourself a lot of diagnostic money. And in here, in a nutshell, if the headlights go out and come back on quickly, we have a bad connection somewhere. If the headlights go out and they come back slowly, our connection's really bad. So we're going to be looking for that, but you're going to tell us what the headlights are doing, which is going to save you money. Now, they have to have the car act up when they have it in order for them to diagnose it. So if they say, ma'am, we've had your car for three days and we've started your car every hour, 8 hours a day, and it's not clicking, there's nothing else other than guessing. And you might say, well, what's an educated guess cost? But I think you're going to end up with some kind of a bad battery connection, which about 80% of the click but don't crank symptoms typically are, is a battery or a battery connection. And oftentimes that can be fixed for less than $80. Clean up the battery cables or replace the battery. Of course, replacing the battery is more than $80. But cleaning up the cables.
That. I did do that.
Okay. And if you still have it, then I think that you have an 85% chance of a bad connection, but really and truly you and your neighbors aren't going to know a bad connection like some gray-haired guy like me who's been around cars for 50 years.
I know that.
So I think
I have those kind of neighbors. Thank you.
Yeah. Go to Blackwell Automotive. Talk to Aaron, okay, and tell him if he can't fix it, then I'll drive from Tempe and help him fix it, and he'll just die laughing. Okay?
All right. And
I want to tell you something. I don't make any money on these kinds of things. But what it's going to do is he's going to know that I talk to you personally, because I always add something like that so that they know that Crazy Mark is on the other line. And I'm quite sure they can fix it. If it'll happen, they can fix it. If it'll happen.
Okay.
They may have you wiggle the shifter. So when you get in, before you put your key in, they want you to take the shifter and wiggle it up and down, up and down. Just wiggle it hard up, hard down. And then they're going to say, put the key in and start it. And you go, you know, every time I do that, then it starts. And then Aaron's going to go, okay, we'll adjust your neutral safety switch. That's it. That's how we were supposed to work together. Or there's three answers, Marcia. Yes, no, or I don't know. Men never say I don't know, but women do. So talk to Aaron at Blackwell Automotive, and he'll take care of you. Okay?
I will. Thank
okay.
you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, ma'am. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. My son has an appointment Monday to bring his 2014 GMC with a 5.3, the automatic transmission exchange, to have his transmission overhauled.
Okay.
So he has 140,000 miles on this truck. He's never pulled a trailer. He never carried any weight. He had his fluid and filter changed every 40,000 miles. And now he's having his transmission overhauled at 140. You think that's normal service life?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, wait a minute. This truck has been around the equator 6 times. And you're complaining that it, what would you expect it to be, Bob? A 200,000 mile transmission?
Yeah. I was hoping.
Oh, Bob, come on.
No.
Let me change your question. Mark, on a GM, a GMC with a 5.3, it's a truck. Mark, what's the expected life of the transmission? My answer would have been, if you're lucky, you'll do 150, but most of them we're going to be doing between 120 and 130. Most of them are going to go, I mean, they're going to, the clutches are going to give out. They're going to start leaking profusely. They're going to lose third gear, and it'll go from second to fourth and blah, blah, blah. But no, I'm not bothered by that at all. 140,000 miles, 6 times around the equator, and how many thousands of shifts has that transmission done? So no, I can tell you, I'll tell you this, Bob, I promise you this. I got lots of customers that were doing these at 80 and 90, and there's a common thread there. Oftentimes there's kids involved and they don't necessarily drive like they would with mom and dad were sitting in the car with them. So, but then again, my truck has 165,000 miles on it, and I've been around the world 6 times just like you have. So if the transmission decides to give up the ghost, I got my mileage out of it. And if he's changed
one
the
more
fluid,
question,
well, go ahead.
Do you think, are you familiar with Mobil 1 synthetic LVATF?
Of course.
Do you think that's better than the regular Delco Dexron fluid?
Well, a synthetic is a synthetic. It can be in any brand of box you want. Doesn't make any difference. Here's the difference, okay, real quick. Here's the difference. Conventional oil turns to a solid at about 20 below zero. It turns to a wax. Synthetic doesn't till 60 below zero. So synthetic stays a lubricant, a viable, pumpable, flowing lubricant at 60 below zero. Now let's go to the top end. A conventional oil at about 230, 240 is going to turn to a tar. So it's hard to, now that's not the coolant temperature, that's the oil temperature. So 230, 250, somewhere around there, we're going to turn to a tar. A synthetic turns to a tar at 500 degrees long after the engine's gone to heaven. So the protection on a synthetic is far greater, cold and hot, than conventional oil. But all the synthetics are made to the same standard. I don't care what brand, Mobil, Delo, Chevron, Amsoil, they're all the same. Just buy price. That's what I'd do if I were you, is just buy price. Okay?
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, good luck, Bob. Roger, you stay right there. I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to come back and get you. And we do have line 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have four lines available. Roger's got one, and we'll be back right after this. All righty. I'm back, and I just want to touch up with Bob. Bob on that. Bob had a problem with, or he didn't have a problem. He has a 2014 GMC 5.3. It's a truck, and the transmission needs to be overhauled at 140, and he was asking questions about that. It's a very common discussion point that we have with our customers with respect to time that it's going to give up. It goes, for instance, most all of you will replace the alternator in the first 100,000 miles, and in reality, the sweet spot might be 50 to 75. And there's, you know, tires. Tires depend on how many miles you drive and how fast you go and how well you take care of your tires. But there's people out there that go 10 years with tires, and we don't touch tires that are 10 years old. Neither does Discount Tire and a lot of other tire stores, because we know that that tire is timed out and it needs to be replaced regardless of what the tread looks like. And we all know that we're going to get sued if a car that comes into our shop, they find out the tires are 14 years old and a tire blows out, crashes. People are going to be suing the shop because you should have known that that tire was timed out. So those are the kinds of issues that we have. Anyway, we're going to go to Roger. Roger, good morning. How can I help you?
Yeah, I'm an older guy, and I have a 2020 RAV4, and I have a 2019 Tacoma. The RAV4 has about 5,000 miles. The Tacoma has about 12,000. Well, for the first couple of years, they did free oil changes and everything, and so I didn't worry about it. Now I'm at the point where I have to pay for it. How often, and they have synthetic oil in, how often should I be taking it in to get it checked out?
Let me ask you, how many miles a year do you drive on those vehicles?
Well, the RAV4 is a couple of years old, and it's only got about 5,000.
Okay,
all right. 2019 is... has about 12,000 miles.
Okay. I'm going to tell you what I think you ought to do. I think you should go to a semi-synthetic oil. It's cheaper. And it also has the range annually that you need, because the full synthetic oil is going to be a lot more money, and it's good for 15,000 to 20,000 miles, and that could be the rest of these cars' lives. So let's back off the full synthetic. Your car is going to be fine. Let's go to a semi-synthetic, and let's go to once a year oil change, and I want you to change the oil at the beginning of the summer. So every April, you change the oil, and I want you to go through the summertime in Phoenix with fresh oil, and I want you to use a semi-synthetic, and that's my advice to you.
Okay. Now, what about what shop should I go to, or should I stay with a dealer?
Well, let me ask you, where, give me cross streets, give me major cross streets.
I'm at Union Hills Drive and 67th Avenue.
I'd probably drop down to 38th Avenue and Indian School. I know that's going to be a jaunt for you, but that's Harker's Automotive. Another place is 25th Street Auto on 25th Street, but you're on the Avenue side. That's kind of why I'm sending you over to Harker's. That's the closest shop I have in that area. They do good work. It's husband and wife and a nephew. And Bob and Ellen are very good people. And you can wait for it. If you call them and you say, I want to have my oil changed and I want to wait for it, then they'll schedule you appropriately. So you go there, you sit in their lobby for half an hour, 45 minutes, and then you're out of there. So that's okay. That's the best I can do in that area.
Okay. What was their Harker's location?
38th Avenue and Indian School.
38th and Indian School.
Yeah, it's called Larry Harker's Auto. Larry okay. Harker's Auto.
One thing I've been doing, but I don't know if it's worth it. The Tacoma, I only drive it when it's going to go over 15 miles or more. And so I've never driven when it's less than that on it.
No, that's fine. It's kind of like a horse. You don't want to take the horse out of the barn that hasn't been out of the barn for 6 months and take him to a drag race. So your motor, your car is going to love you if you use it. And the more you use it on one, what we call a heat cycle. You get in the car, and people make a mistake. They get in the car, and they drive 2 miles, and they park it, and then they come back home. Well, they never got the motor warmed up. And that's not good for an engine because we don't boil the water out of the oil. Water boils at 212. We need to get the oil temperature up to 220 to get the water out of the oil. And it doesn't make any difference if you got the cheapest oil in the world or the most expensive oil in the world. Moisture is a problem. So in your particular case, all I want to say to you is you can, if you're going to use the RAV4 on a regular basis, that's good. But on the Tacoma, if it's got 12,000, I just do an oil change once a year and I do it before the summer started. That's how I would do it.
So you semi-synthetic, right?
Well, let me ask you a question. Is the Tacoma going 12,000 miles a year?
No. It's 12,000 miles since I've owned it.
Okay.
I bought them both new.
I would use a semi-synthetic on both of them.
Okay, thank you.
I would
you.
Use it. I'm trying to control your costs. I can cut $50, $60 off your oil change bill if we go to a semi-synthetic, and the semi-synthetic will handle the mileage on the cars.
Okay, that's what I need to know.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Joe, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi, Mark. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay, good, because I'm on Bluetooth, but I lowered the volume and stuff. Anyway, my question is, I got two Kias, Sorentos, and we've had some strange issues with them. This one happens to have a warranty on it, so extended warranty. It smells of, the fuel smell, okay? It's pretty strong. Okay, I checked the gas cap. I got to replace it. The current gas cap doesn't click, so I bought a new gas cap. But I happen to be in Kia for one of the other cars. And he just mentioning it to the service guy. He said, well, it's probably a fuel pump. Okay. So,
Wait a minute, Joe. We're just going,
yeah.
All we're doing is going in a dark hole. Let me ask questions, okay? Is there
sure.
a time when you don't smell gas as opposed to, or is the gas smell you have all the time?
No, I'm sitting in the car right now, okay? The car's running. There is no gas smell.
It seems
pretty much, a lot of times, pretty strong outside also.
Okay, so. Okay. First of all, your car is a fuel-injected car. The fuel pressure could be 50 pounds or more per square inch. If you had a fuel leak in the fuel system, it'd be squirting gas like a fire hose. So for somebody to say that you have a cracked line, that's just flat bull. Okay? If you have a fuel leak, it's going to be a big one. Every time you turn that key on, it's going to be peeing gas everywhere. So let me ask you a question. Who fills up the car, you or your wife?
I do.
How many times do you click it after it clicks off?
Well, that's it. That gas cap. Right now it doesn't click. I just bought a new gas cap. I haven't put it on.
No, I didn't say gas cap. I'm talking about the nozzle in your hand. You stick the nozzle in and you pull the trigger on it, and after it kicks off, how many more times do you pump fuel in it?
I don't. Once it stops, I pull out the hose.
99 times out of 100, we find that the top of the fuel tank is wet. Because somebody's stuffing the tank. Somebody's filling it too fast. There's a problem with the driver. And so if I were you, the next time I had an in for an oil change, I'd take it to a quick lube shop that lets you go in and you say, all I want to do is just look at the fuel tank from the underside, and I'd like you to look at the fuel tank and tell me if you see any evidence of gasoline leaking over the sides and down the sides of my fuel tank from up above. And if they find that there's a leak from up above, almost always somebody's stuffing the tank. Now, there are other possibilities, but the only two places you're, see, we take the, we have an evaporative system where we suck the fumes off your tank and we send them to the motor. The evaporative system is closed. It is not in the open. So we're sucking the fumes off the tank. We're putting them to the motor. The motor sends them to the cylinders and they go out the tailpipe. That's what's called the evaporative system. So when we stuff the tank, then instead of having vapor being fed to the motor, we have liquid gas being fed to the motor. So I want you to stop on the first click, no matter what, stop on the first click and see if that changes it. And if it changes it, then that's what we need to do on your particular car. But if you have a gas leak in a fuel-injected car, it'll put a gallon of gas inside 60 seconds on a bad leak. It'll put a gallon of gas on the ground, and that'll be an 8-foot circle of gas. You don't have any of that. So
go ahead. Quick question. You know, the dealership. We had my other car in, the Kia Sorento, and just happened to be off a warranty, and there was an issue with, we had check engine light was on, and lands up that they diagnosed it that it was something to do with a manifold pump or something like that.
Manifold pressure switch.
It cost $700 to fix it. So what I wanted to also know is their labor cost is $165 an hour. Is that what normal shops charge, or is a lot? Is it less?
I did a 30 or 40 shop in my geographical area, and the average shop is now $175. So I'm surprised. Wow. If you're dealing with a dealer, I'm surprised, because typically the dealers are the 180, 190, and then the independent shops are in the middle, and then the specialty shops or the quick lube shops are below. But right now, I can tell you unequivocally, of the 40 or 50 shops I called that were dealers, as chain stores, mom and pop repair shops, 175 is the average.
Okay. So you don't think it's the fuel pump? Back to 2017?
No. The fuel pump's in the tank. If it leaks gas, it leaks it into the tank. The tank. It's in the fluid. We cool the fuel pump with the gas inside the tank.
I was going to bring it in to have a diagnosis fee for it, for the fuel pump, but I don't want to do that. I'm not bringing it back to the dealer, okay?
Okay. If I'm wrong and it is an external one, if it had a leak in it, it would be puking gasoline at a major rate onto the ground. You would leave a stream of gasoline from the time you started it to the time you shut it off, and it would probably have caught fire by now. Now, here's something else. If we have a major leak in the fuel delivery system, the car typically won't run because it needs 50, 55 pounds of pressure to fire the injectors and to make the car run. Well, if the fuel pump is leaking profusely and can only generate 10 pounds of pressure, the car ain't going to run. It's just not going to run. So, you know, the easiest thing for you to do is take it in for an oil change and say, I want you to look underneath the car and see any signs of a leaking gasoline. Anything on top of the tank, because if the top of the tank is leaking, the O-ring on the top of the tank is leaking, there's going to be clean areas where the gasoline has run around the end of the tank and around the side of the tank. You'll be able to see that. All you need is a gray-haired guy to look at it. What part of town do you live in?
I'm in North, I guess it's North Phoenix. Consider it Cave Creek, but the crossroads are Carefree Highway and Cave Creek Road.
Okay, well, why don't you go to Kurtz Automotive at I-17 and Bell and just tell him what you told me. You're scared to death of a fuel leak.
So Kurtz?
It's Kurtz, yeah. Kurtz with the C, and he's on I-17 and Bell, the northeast corner.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'll do that because I'm looking for a good shop.
Kurt's and Kurt and Eric are going to take your car. They're probably going to say, get your butt in here because you're coming with us. We're going to lift it up in the air, and he's going to check from where the filler neck is all the way to the top of the engine where the injectors are at, and he's going to look at that whole area. And if there's a fuel leak, he'll point it out to you, and you'll see where the gasoline has been leaking. You'll see that.
Okay, great.
Okay.
So did they take extended warranty? I mean, I have an extended warranty. It's not Kia's. It's one, you know, that's it can be, if, you can go anywhere with it. So.
Okay. The answer is yes. Most of us, that's a pretty small list because so many of them want us to use cheap parts and they want to negotiate the labor rate and they want to negotiate the diagnostic process. They want to do all of that and they want to control their costs at our expense. And so all of a sudden I say to them, wait a minute. We're not married here. I'm not responsible for the repair of this car and you want me to financially participate in the repair of your car to save you money, and that ain't happening at my shop. So I'll give you the street rate, what we call the street rate. That's what we charge mom and dad, sister and brother, the top and the bottom. Everybody gets the same rate. I'll give you that. And then they say, well, no, I want to send you the part. Okay, well, who's going to warranty the part? Well, you are. What do you mean? I didn't sell the part. Why am I going to warranty it? This is the conversation that goes on. So be careful about that. But if you have an aftermarket warranty, certainly you can call Kurtz. And after you determine if there's a problem, then talk to Kurtz about it. Anyway, 602, no, never mind. Mark at MarkSalem.com if you want to continue the conversation. Mark at MarkSalem.com. And that's where we're at. And I know I'm a minute late, and I'm sorry about that, but we'll be back next week.